The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So it's now kind of many years ago. Co-teaching a retreat with a friend who is much wilder than I am. That's not a high bar, but he's much wilder. And he's kind of like most alive, surfing a wave that wants to eat him alive. And I'm most alive taking a nap. So some temperamental differences. We get to a point in the retreat where it was very still. I think it was maybe a 10-day retreat. And very still and very tranquil. And he's not dismissive of meditation. He's a long, deep practitioner, a lot of access, but we're riding down the hill in the golf cart to the teacher's rooms late at night. And he said to me, like, the Dharma is parasympathetically biased. The parasympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system, peripheral nervous system, associated usually with kind of the replenishment of resources, not fighting, flighting, but the replenishment of resources, soothing, resting, digesting. The Dharma is parasympathetically biased. And what I took him to be saying was, there's an excessive emphasis on calming and not enough on vitality or aliveness. And that line stayed with me all these years ago. I got where he was coming from, you know. Sometimes maybe the Dharma can collude with some measure of flatness or pinched emotion, pinched expression. Sometimes people get the idea that spiritual maturity is kind of like narrowing the band of emotional experience and expression, you know, that we sort of, it gets to be a thinner range, you know, highs and lows. And we can become afraid of intensity and aliveness. We can practice in such a way where we're essentially controlling intensity, and we can impose a kind of control. So I get the sentiment. But generally speaking, maybe it's my bias, but I have a lot of trust in tranquility. The Dharma makes a kind of bold claim about truth, you know, that knowledge and vision of things as they are depends on tranquility. We will not perceive the truth unless we establish a lot of steadiness, tranquility, patience. The truth in that sense depends on our body. From a Buddhist perspective. And it may be worthwhile to consider the mind states that have led you to clarity and those to confusion, the mind states, the body states that have given you access to good predictions about what's coming, where to look for happiness, and also the mind states, body states, in which we've been prone to a partial perception or poor decisions, judgments. Our mind has to cope with feeling. with arousal in our body. And when our chest is on fire or there's a thin film of yuckiness or some intensity coating our whole body, we need to know. And it's not like we have some super intense feeling, you know, like really it, whatever, some explosion of feeling pleasant or unpleasant. We don't have that and be like, oh, whatever, nothing to see here. That means something that demands words. And from the place of hyper arousal, we feel compelled to build a lot of meaning. And we build our stories on the foundation of feeling. Feeling necessitates story. And so you can investigate, how does this constellate for you? And the potency of our stories must match the potency of our feeling. And some of those stories, it's not all bad. Story doesn't mean bad. Some of those stories can be deeply empowering, maybe freeing, liberating in some way. Insight, in a sense, is a freeing story, perception. And part of retreat practice is generating enough feeling, enough affect that a new story becomes necessary. That's empowering. But many of the stories are just the kind of, you know, our desperation to know, to control. And we can live our whole life in the kind of dream of the fabrications that emerge as kind of exhaust off the engine of feeling. And maybe we're closer to truth when there's no urge to say anything, to think anything. Tranquility, in other words, is central in many ways, you know, not all, but many of the afflictive states that get us in trouble involve hyperarousal. Some level clinging, like at the heart of the Dharma, clinging is a kind of state of where the feeling is a little too much. Compulsivity, the drivenness of our lives, is too much. And so in many cases, not all, but in many cases, tranquility will lead us in the direction of more freedom. But this is a special kind of tranquility. This is not a flatness. There's still alertness, but alert brightness is different from hyperarousal. And so much of the Dharma is just self-soothing. Some of what I was alluding to in the Siddh, the dukkha, suffering is manifest as some kind of friction, tension, viscosity. And ignorance, even the ways we ignore, we're trying not to see there's tension in that. Greed manifests as tension, hatred manifests as tension, the urgency of feeling manifests as like something has to happen. That's there's tension there. The self, so just the sense of the arising, the congealing of self is a kind of tension. And so part of the value of deep relaxation, of insight into the emptiness of the self as we see the weight and the tension of grasping, of selfing. And so we soothe ourselves. We soothe ourselves, but in a deep way, have to find many refuges and have to bring them close at hand. Practice in such a way that they're never far, even when we forget. The Dharma is a kind of, yes, in a way, it's a technology of soothing. Excuse me, but those skills develop slowly. Those skills develop slowly. It takes time before just one breath calls the whole of the Dharma back to our heart. It takes time to cultivate refuge and love in the space of awareness. It takes time to bring metta awareness to what is not tranquil and disidentify. Takes time to learn how to rest deeply. And emotion, you could call it maybe emotion regulation of this kind takes effort, but sometimes our resources are already depleted. There's no effort left, you know? I saw an article that was kind of prompted these reflections just a few days ago from a group at Harvard, and I think the title of the article is "Low Effort Emotion Regulation." I just saw that article. I was like, "Yes, please. May I have another low effort?" Emotion regulation. Okay, here's what they write. We introduce the concept of low effort emotion regulation, strategies that involve low initiation costs, minimal demands on executive attention, and little to no physical exertion. Low effort strategies may function as emotion regulation affordances, making regulation feel more immediately accessible when individuals are cognitively depleted or unmotivated. Okay, so what did they say? I don't usually just rattle off weird research findings like this, but this is what they say. And they marshal evidence for a lot of this. Music. Not Nick Drake, not Elliott Smith, not The National, no, but music. Okay. Weighted blankets, smells. Smell is very deep associative learning. And so they, you know, especially around anxiety, actually, a different smell may break some associative linkage. It's like, okay, yeah. Nature, physical touch, and they from a friend or family or partner or whatever, or a healthcare professional, and specifically they highlighted touch to the head and face. Yeah, the soothing quality of that. They said, and then they had a couple language-based strategies. So distanced self-talk, not why am I upset, but why I would say, why is Matthew upset? I always talk that way. I always speak in the third person, you know, just as a Dharma teacher. Why is Matthew poorly dressed? Why? No, seriously, this kind of it's moving it into the metacognitive realm. And there may be a kind of mechanism of some psychotherapeutic approaches of of self-distanced ways of speaking. And then affect labeling, they shared, okay, so actually noting the feeling flavors that are arising, that reliably downregulates physiological markers of distress. So we see what kind of energy does our heart have, is it there's a lot of interest, a lot of energy, maybe one way of bringing in a measure of tranquility. And then sometimes in states of depletion, I don't have much to give. Okay, what can I do? Bring a measure of tranquility. And then to see what does life feel like? What do I look like? What does the world look like from the vantage point of tranquility? So offer this for your consideration. And yeah, nice to be here with you. See you next week.